Morning. Today's daf in Gittin is Mem Zayin. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf is Lona Zech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We are in the Mishnah Mem Vav Amud Beis. Let's begin the Mishnah Mochers Atzma. Vezban of the Ove Kochavim. Big theme in the fourth parak of the Masechta has been Avdus, being a Neve Kanani. Obviously, our Mishnah is not talking about Neve Kanani. We're talking about a Jew. And what the Jew is doing is he's selling himself and his children to an Oved Kochavim. It's obviously not right what he's doing. He's putting himself in a makam sakana, putting himself in a dangerous situation. It's obvious that the person shouldn't do so, but it's financial straits, and he obviously feels that financially it's necessary. So the Mishnah says, "Ain podno so." So once he does this, and as we're going to see in just a moment in the Gemara, he's doing so habitually. So at this point in time, the Chachamim relieved everyone from having to redeem him. Pigeon shvuyim, redeeming somebody who was taken to captivity, is a mitzvah gedola. It's a huge mitzvah. It's a function of tzedakah. Really, the community is required and responsible for redeeming him. But the Mishnah is teaching us a chiddush, and that this person is doing so habitually. He's putting himself in a position where he's selling himself into some form of servitude and slavery, and he's doing so habitually. So the Chachamim said to the community, "Ain podin oso." So there's no longer a mitzvah to redeem him. Avaponas abanim lachem mitzvah saviim. Once the father dies, and now it's just the children. The children were certainly not responsible for selling themselves. That was dad's fault. So once dad dies, so then there's a mitzvah to redeem the children, but not while dad is alive. Why is dad being alive going to obviate the need to redeem the children? So stay tuned. I'll show you a Rashi. I'm going to highlight a Rashi later on in the Gemara that's going to explain that why there should be a difference whether dad's alive or dad is no longer alive. Amar Rav Asi on this, the Gemara's first comment. So he sells himself. He does it a second time. He does it a third time. Meaning, the only time that there's going to be a relief of the community in terms of the community not having to redeem him is only if he does it a second or third time. Meaning, like I said back in the Mishnah, he's doing so habitually. So then there's a relief, a takana made by the Chachamim, where the Chachamim said to the community, okay, you don't have to redeem him. But prior to that point in time, meaning he sells himself the first time, so then there's a mitzvah pigeon shvuyim a second time. There still is a mitzvah. Only when you get to the third time, there's not going to be a mitzvah. Okay, and that's it. That's the Mishnah. That's the halacha. Okay, from this point till the next Mishnah, which comes up now in the middle of today's Amud, of Amud Aleph, so we're going to be treated to three stories. Story number one. The Gemara starts off, Hanu b'nei b'machzei, di'as v'zuzim of dikochavim. So there was a people. Rashi says that b'machzei is just simply the name of the people where they're from. Anyway, so what they would do is they would borrow consistently from the from Goyim. However, they never really put together a good payment plan in terms of paying back their loans. So what do the Goyim do? Okay, you're not going to pay us. You owe us money. Good. So you'll work for us. And they basically enslave the borrowers as payment for that. And they did so, as we're going to see in just a moment. They did so repeatedly. This was a common move on their part. Also, come to Rav Huna. So they go to Rav Huna, and So Rav Huna says, they're basically selling themselves into slavery, and we have to apply our Mishnah. Our Mishnah taught us that you don't redeem them. So so on that, they said to Rav Huna, yeah, but you know, you taught us, every time you taught us this Mishnah in Gittin, so you taught us that that's only when someone does this so habitually. And Rav Huna's response is, yes, correct. I know I taught you that. And it's exactly true right here. These people do this consistently. They borrow money from these non-Jews. They consistently get sold into slavery on account of the fact that they can't pay back their loans. And so they do this habitually. So the Mishnah's rule applies. That's story number one. Straightforward. Just a simple application of what we learned back in the Mishnah. Story number two. Person sold himself into slavery to a Ludai. Ludai, very interesting Rashi over here. Last Rashi on the Amud. Rashi writes, Uma she'ochlim b'nei Adam. Cannibals. So yeah, I know. I know. I didn't see that coming either. Okay. Cannibals. So So a person sold himself into slavery to cannibals. Now, probably, the Gemara's intent of telling us the story specifically by cannibals, first of all, it's what happened. I mean, that's the story. But also, over here now, the consequences get even more serious, because now you're not just sold into slavery, but you're sold as maybe perhaps dinner as well. So it's, in other words, it's a kind of stafashas. We're talking about someone's life is at jeopardy. So, okay. So anyway, so. So they come in front of Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Ami's response is, okay, redeem them. Meaning, we have a mitzvah opportunity. A person sold into slavery, it's now Pejon Shvuyim, on Sakonis Nefashos. So I think Ravasi says the correct thing to do is, Rabbi Ami says the correct thing to do is to redeem them. So Amar.
Huh? I think the guy said,
oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Amar Leh. Yeah. You're correct. The grammar supports your position. So Amar Leh. So he says to him, Pir Khan. So right, that's what Rashi says. Padani, I want you to redeem me. Redeem me. Amar Leh Tanan. Mocher Asmas Espanav Lo Avdiko Chavim. Ein Parnaso. So to that, Rabbi Ami says, look, I'm really sorry, you can't. The Mishnah says that when someone puts himself in that position, so then there's no longer a mitzvah of redemption. But what you can do is you can redeem the sons as a result of kilkul. So now, here's the Rashi. I told you at the Mishnah, I'm going to highlight a Rashi. Look at the second Rashi on the Amud. Rashi says, Mishum kilkula, shelo yutmu ubov di kochavim, v'yilamdu mimasehim. Problem is that when the kids are raising up in a non-Jewish environment, so what the kids are going to do is obviously be influenced by their upbringing. So if they're right now being brought up in a makom of Ovdei Kochavim, so clearly that's how they're going to behave. V'yalamdu me'maseim. And then Rashi continues, uvechaye avihem like lamechash. Now as long as dad's alive, so there's little to worry about. Okay. Lahachi demento lehon avihem, because dad's going to protect them. So, and that goes back to really to explaining our Mishnah. Meaning, what distinction did the Mishnah make? That once dad dies, so then you can redeem the children. So, using this Rashi obviously is bothered by the Mishnah. Meaning, what's the difference between when dad's alive versus when dad's dead? So Rashi, just using this Rashi, just that's basically the simple pshat in the Mishnah. That as long as dad is alive, so again, dad is certainly not making the best decisions in life. Okay, he's selling himself and his children to slavery. But in other words, but as long as dad's there, so there, dad's going to protect the kids and dad's going to keep the kids on the straight and narrow to the best of his ability. But once dad's no longer alive, so now there's a legitimate concern that these kids are going to get lost. So then, under those circumstances, so then you can redeem them.
You can infer that the father sells the children, then.
Yeah, that, right. I agreed. The koshikin hachadika katala. So, and now over here, meaning, the Gemara is now using an argument. If we're allowed to redeem the children because we're worried that the children are going to get lost amongst the Ovdei Kochavim, so over here, we're going to not only spiritually lose the children, we're going to physically lose the children. I mean, these are cannibals. So we're worried about Katala, and probably that's why Rashi earlier said that we're talking about cannibals. We're worried about Katala. We're worried about now they're actually going to get lost, meaning physically. So over here, for sure there's a mitzvah to redeem them. So Amalei Rabban Rabbi Ami, how you saw Mumarhu, Dekach Chazilei Dekach So they say to Rabbi Ami, again, not so fast. I wouldn't be so quick to redeem him. He's a mummer. He's somebody who rejects Torah. He rejects Torah and mitzvos. And how do I know this? Meaning this is an important point to emphasize. We're obviously judging somebody and his commitment to Torah. And over here, not his commitment to Torah, but his rejection of the Torah. How do we know that someone rejected the Torah? So the evidence that's being presented is that we saw him eat nevel and treifa. So the Gemara continues, Amar lehu, his response is, Eima l'teyavanu tekachal. So Rabbi Ami is being defensive. You don't know that just because he's eating treif, that means that he rejected Torah. It could very well be that the Yetzer Hara got the best of him. In other words, we all have taivas. Akash Baruch Hu created every one of us with the Yetzer Hara, and the Yetzer Hara is such that you see food, it's delicious. So Torah, Kashrus, right? But the Yetzer Hara got the best of him. So over here, can we say that the Yetzer Hara got the best of him? And that does not mean he's a mummer. It just simply means that the Yetzer Hara got the best of him. So Amru Le Vahazimnin. They say to Rabbi Ami, no. We know that he rejects the Torah because we know that there are circumstances in which there is Isser v'Heter placed right in front of him. And we know that he went right past the Heter in order to eat the Isser. That's more than a taifa. That's more than just the Yetzer Hara getting the best of him. If there's ample opportunity to eat food and it's delicious and it's kosher, and he goes over that and he goes to non-kosher, that's a clear demonstration that he rejects Torah. He's a mummer. And under those circumstances, so then we don't have the right to financially obligate the community to redeem him when the person is a mummer. So Amalei zil lo kashav kele daf akenech. So Rabbi Ami says to him, I got really bad news for you, but I can't redeem you. Meaning, I have edus. And by the way, the Rashi over here, another Rashi to highlight. Va'achli surah. Edim hei edu. Rashi says that there are witnesses, meaning it's not just that it's hearsay, it's not just it's conjecture. There's actual testimony. There's credible testimony that this person is somebody who is eating nevela and not leteava, not just simply because he got a yetzahara, but because he rejects. There was heter right in front of him. He went right past the heter. He went to eat the iser. So, and there's edus and there's testimony. So Rabbi Ami says to the guy, I'm really sorry. You put yourself in a position where you sold yourself into slavery, and I understand they're cannibals, but at the same time also, you're a mummer. So he tells the guy no. Third story of the sugya.
I mean, he has a type of shrimp. So I mean, it's not like he's a type of, like he's hungry. He's hungry, I can understand.
Good. You're defending.
You go to the kosher.
Yeah,
you did. So the taiva is because, he knows it better.
Defending the Jewish people. I like it. I like it, but that doesn't seem to accord with the Gemara.
No, the Gemara make it sound like it's only his hungry.
Right, there's in other words, to the. Right.
The, so they hear
okay.
Things.
Fine. Fine. Could be. Okay. Third story of the sugya, and this one is by far and away the winner of the three stories. Although the second one, admittedly, once you introduce cannibals into the story, so already it sounds like you have a winner. But the third one is going to be the winner. Reish Lakish of Anafshe Luludai. So Reish Lakish sold himself to the Ludaim. So assuming that, again, we're talking about the cannibals once again, he sells himself to Ludai. So now you have to ask the question, and Tosus offers an opinion on this matter. Are we talking about Reish Lakish before he was a Baal Tshuva or after he's a Baal Tshuva? We know that Reish Lakish went through a transformation of life. He started off his life as being not the firmest of people. In fact, he was a robber by trade. And then he meets his brother-in-law, his future brother-in-law, Rabbi Yochanan. And not to go through the story now, we will see the story later on about Metzia. But basically, the story goes is that Rav Yochanan was Mekarv Reish Lakish, and not only was Mekarv Reish Lakish, but turned him into one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of our history. So so this story that we're about to learn about Reish Lakish, was this before or after it was about Tshuva? If you take a look at the top Tosus over here, Kodim Shechazor Lamutav. So Tosus says that this story most probably takes place in the before and not in the after. So the Mestama Lohaya Mazal Zabatmo Kolkach. I mean, look, the story we're about to tell is going to be a wild story, meaning not untrue, but wild meaning, you'll see what I mean. It's going to be a wild story regarding Reish Lakish. Probably this is a story regaling Reish Lakish's early years, okay, when he was a slightly wilder person. So so the story goes, Reish Lakish avin nafshi l'ludai, so he sold himself to a l'ludai. Shaka ba'adai, chayta v'gagalasa. So he had like a knapsack with him, some sort of bag. Now the bag was filled, and as Rashi points out over here, sak kashura pakir v'igul shel evin o shel ofer besocha. It was heavy, and I'm conjecturing. Okay, the Gemara doesn't say this, but Reish Lakish was such a strong man that he picked it up like it wasn't a big deal. So in other words, the impression that they had is it's a knapsack. It's carry on luggage. It's not a big deal. So shakabadai chayta v'galgalata amar gemiri. So now. The Yuma Basra, he says that we have the following tradition. The Yuma Basra called the Bay Mina Avdile. I know that you're going to ask for my last request. Okay, I know we always see this in the movies, right? Any last request, be right before we kill you, and in this case, and eat you. So, any last request? He says, I know that you have that minug, and he says this is very interesting. Why do you have that minug? Or why it's such a funny minug, right? Any last requests? So the kol debay mina avdileki hechidelechol adme. So two pshatim over here. Let's first take a look at Rashi. Lechol adme sheyimchol al damo. Meaning, basically, you'll be mochalas, right? Meaning, we're going to do terrible things to you. We're about to kill you, and we're about to eat you. Okay, so, and now these are unforgivable. So I don't really know what kind of mechila we're talking about, but before we do these terrible things to you, so to provide some sort of mechila, so do us the following favor, you know, a last request before we kill you. Okay, so there'll be some form of, I'm going to say it, but it's hard to imagine, some form of reconciliation between the victim and the executioner. Okay, that is one pshat. There's another pshat right here on the daf. It's set over on the, I have it on the inside margin of my Gemara. It's the Aruch says, Perish, Kevin she'osen lo ritzono, mematek damo. The word lechel could sometimes mean in the Gemara to sweeten. And adme from the word dam meaning blood. So that his blood becomes sweeter. Meaning that if you appease somebody, if you do something that the person wants, so his blood gets sweeter. So that basically means that better eating. Meaning it'll be, again, I know this sounds strange, but it'll be better eating if you appease him. I somehow knew that you were going to have a contribution to this. Yeah, go.
It's not so far-fetched.
No.
That we don't eat animals that have been checked with pain.
Right. Right. Okay. I hear. So the Amar Gemir the Yuma Baswa called the Baimina. I'm sorry. So Delech Ladme. So the other pshat in the Gemara is that if you make me if you appease me, so then I'll be better tasting after you kill me. So Yuma Basra. So Amar Le my Nichalach. So they said okay, fair. What's your final request? So Amar Lehu Beina Akam Tinchu VeUzvinchu VeChol Chaminaychu VeChol Chaminaychu Amcheya Chayte Upage. So basically he said to them, I'm going to hit you 1.5 times with my knapsack. Right? It's a knapsack. It's going to, you know, but like, I guess it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to somehow with this little knapsack, I'm going to feel some sort of just reward by hitting you with the knapsack. But it's a knapsack. I'll just hit you 1.5 times. Obviously there's a significance to 1.5 times. I don't know what that is, but you know when you're learning a garata, you got to pick up on these details of 1.5 times. So kamtina v'asvina kol chaminaychu. So he hits him. Now what the knapsack is filled with is rocks and dirt. It was not a light knapsack. And one hit with the knapsack, he killed them all. So kadmache chad chayse nafik nishmase. So, and the truth of the matter is, Reish Lakish only needed him one time in order to basically knock them out. So, and as he was hitting them one time, so nishmat, kadmachi, when he was hitting them, chad chayte, one hit, nafik nishmate, their soul started departing, chakinu lishine, and they started grimacing. They're right. It was a lethal blow, and Amar Le Achuchi Hamechayecht B, and he says to them, "You're laughing at me." The Akati Pashlecha Gabi Pagei Dechayte. So I still have a half left. Meaning, right? It's 1.5 hits that you promised me. So I have a half left. Katlinu Kulu, and he kills all of them. Okay, that is the story with Reish Lakish and the cannibals. And again, Tosa says this has got to be talking about his early years, not his later years. Navak v'asa Yosef. Okay, that's the story. And again, the reason why the Gemara told us the story here is because it fits in with our Mishnah of Amocher Atzmo, you sell yourself into slavery. So, a story regarding Reish Lakish. Now, Nafik v'asa Yosef ka'acha v'shase. And it's an interesting transition. The Gemara now is going to talk about Reish Lakish in terms of his general conduct. Now, this part is not clear to me. I don't know why the Gemara is bringing this over here at this point in time. It sounds like we're basically talking about just Nihugim of Reish Lakish. And it certainly sounds like, as I'll show you in just a moment, I'll show you Rashi. It certainly sounds like this is when he got into the post-Baal Tshuva stage of his life. So I don't know what this part of the story is doing here, but let's go through it. He would eat and he would drink. Amar Le Barti, and his daughter would say to him, Lo Bais Midele Mezgalei. Do you want something to lie down on? Meaning, you really live a very Spartan life. Right, Reish Lakish did not really indulge himself with much of the pleasures of this world. Rashi says, "Kol yamav amirim halayin Rashi, kol yamav komasha haya mistakir lo yamitzamtsim latzne liyomachar." Reish Lakish never really saved anything for the next day. He bought something, he ate it. Right, he bought something to drink, he drank it. And Reish Lakish did not have this philosophy of, oh, I got to put together a fund, a trust fund, you know, my kids, my grandkids. Reish Lakish didn't believe in any of that. So I'm presuming, and again, I don't know if I'm right about this, but I'm presuming that's after he becomes a Baal Tshuva. This is the way he conducted himself. So Amrli Biti Kresi Kari. So he says, my daughter, my stomach is my mattress. Meaning, I don't need anything fancy, right? I have a stomach to lie down on. That's good. I'm comfortable. Kinach Nafshei Shavak Kach Demarika. And, I'm sorry, Kava Demarika. And when he died, so he left over a little bit of saffron. Saffron was expensive. And he left over a little bit of it to inherit. But he didn't leave it over because, again, there was a plan and there was a will and a trust. And no, he left it over because he just left it over. In fact, wait just 1 second. In fact, he bemoaned the fact that he left over that little saffron. Meaning he felt that was a waste of his time, energy, and money. Meaning he devoted himself, he completely devoted himself to Limud HaTorah, to spiritual endeavors. And any time that he's working hard to not just make a living, but to make more than a living, he felt that was a waste of his time. So he actually regretted that little saffron they left over for the next generation. So he regretted it. So now I get the basic point of the Gemara. The basic point of the Gemara is that you should use your time wisely. And right, correct. To use your time wisely and any effort and energy that you have to expend, so expend it on learning, on growth in growth in Torah and growth in Yiras Shamayim. And Reish Lakish felt that any material gain in this world is only there to serve that particular purpose. And anything above that is just simply unnecessary. And more than unnecessary, meaning it's a waste of time. So he bemoaned the fact that he left over a little bit of extra saffron. Now again, I don't know why the Gemara brings it in over here. It's great. It's a great insight into Reish Lakish, into Hashkafas Chaim, into philosophy of life. It is great. I just don't know why the Gemara brings it over here, following up on the story of him hitting and killing the cannibals who were trying to eat him. Okay. No, it's a Hashkafic point. Correct. Just, you know, it seems to be misplaced here in the story. Obviously, it's not misplaced. The Gemara intentionally put it over here. And just, you know, you need a better market share.
Did he lose himself to those carnivores for like financial gain? He was trying to get,
right, right. It could be that. But again, Toso says that the whole story of the cannibals was before he was a Baal Tshuva. So, you know, then it's kind of hard to understand the segue between the first and the second part of the story. Okay, we are in the Mishnah Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, and here we begin. There are going to be two big discussions coming up in today's daf. I mean, already we went through the first sugya of today's daf in terms of someone who sells himself into slavery and he does so habitually, and the Chachamim relieve the community of having to redeem such a person because he placed himself and habitually in that precarious situation. Okay, that was the first sugya. Now, as we start the next Mishnah and the next sugya, there are two huge topics that come up. Let's begin. Let's learn the Mishnah. Hamocher sadeilo v'kochavim, you're selling your property to a non-Jew. We're talking about property in Eretz Yisrael. So you're selling land in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. So lokech umevi mimenu bikur mimnei tikkun ha'olam. So the Mishnah says that what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to take the first fruit from the produce, from that yield, and bring the first fruit as Bikurim. Meaning, had you not sold the land to a guy, what would have been the halacha? So we know the first fruits of every season have to be brought to the base of Mikdash. You put it in a basket, you put it on the Mizbeach, then you hand it over to a Kohen. And there's also Kriya. When you hand it over to a Kohen, there's a Parsha in the Torah that you're supposed to read. It's in the beginning of Parsha's Kisavo. The end of Sefer Dvarim. So there really are two mitzvahs. Havas Bikurim, the bringing of Bikurim, and also Kriya. There's a special parsha that you're supposed to read. Sometimes, as we're going to learn in the remainder of today's daf, sometimes you have the mitzvah of Hava, but you don't have the mitzvah of Kriya. And we'll discuss why that is later on. The Chinuch counts as two separate mitzvahs. Anyway, there's a mitzvah of Hava, and there's a mitzvah of Kriya. Here, you sold the land to a non-Jew. Okay, what happens to the Kedushas Haaretz when it's sold to a non-Jew? At this point, I'll simply say it's unclear from the Mishnah. the Mishnah is ambiguous, and we're going to talk about the ambiguity. So, and we're going to talk about what actually happens to the land once it's sold to a non-Jew in terms of the Kedusha Sa'aretz. That's the first big topic that's coming up in the balance of today's daf. The Mishnah says that when you sell your land to a non-Jew, so lokechu mevi memenu bikurim, so you are now are obligated to go ahead and to take the first fruits and bring it as bikurim. So Rashi, Hachi Garcinan. You see the Rashi, the first Rashi on the Mishnah, Hachi Garcinan. Rashi says this is the correct girsa, meaning there is a question of what the correct girsa of the Mishnah is. Rashi says the correct girsa is lokech umevi bikurim, which right, it's almost identical to what we have in our Mishnah. Rashi doesn't have the word mimenu, but lokech umevi bikurim bechol shan tzarich likach mina ove kocham bikurei peruseha bedamim yikarim. The way Rashi learns the Mishnah is that the seller who was guilty of selling land in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, which he should not have done, so he now, an imposition is made on him to go and, whatever it costs, buy Bikurim every year from the non-Jew and to bring it to Yerushalayim and to offer it in Yerushalayim. That's the way Rashi understands the Mishnah, and that's his girsa of the Mishnah.
The sale is valid,
Rabbi Shugel? Yes, the sale is valid. Again, the big topic is what does that sale do to the actual land itself? That's coming up momentarily. If you look at Tosus over here, third Tosus on the Amud, Omer Rabbeinu Tam Debaros Shram Logar Sinan Umevi Bevav V'Hachi Kamar. What Tosus does is he takes out the Vav of Umevi. In other words, the Rabbeinu Tam does not believe that this instruction of the Mishnah is going on the seller. The Vav, that's the Vav of Chibur, it's connection. Meaning, according to Rashi, who has the Vav, so it means the one who sold it, he's the one responsible to buy back the Bikurim every year. So it's like a kanasa, it's almost like a penalty. Hey, you're the one who sold it, you're the one who's going to have to buy the Bikurim and bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. Tosfos says no. Rabbeinu Tam says no. He doesn't feel, in other words, it was a question of Girsa, but the correct Girsa says Tosfos is not the Vav in Umevi, but rather Mevi. V'hachi kamar, Tosfos says, I'm reading the end of the Tosfos. Hachi kamar, kol adam lokech mimenu, Mevi Bikurim, loshna mocher, loshna acher, doesn't matter who buys it. Meaning anyone who buys it is still going to be responsible for the Bikurim. So in other words, this land that's owned by a non-Jew, buyer beware, you buy produce from this person's property. Now how is everyone going to know who bought and who brought the Bikurim? I understand from a pragmatic standpoint, it's hard to imagine how all this gets communicated, but the way Tosfos understands it is that anyone who buys the fruit is going to have a requirement to bring Bikurim.
More basically, how do you identify Bikurim when somebody doesn't feel it, you don't have access to it?
Right. Agreed. It's from a pragmatic standpoint, it's hard to imagine. But okay, but still, the basic idea is what you did was not right. You shouldn't have done it. So now again, Rashi says you the seller. Tosfos says anybody who goes and buys produce is going to have the requirement to bring Bikurim. All right, that's the Mishnah.
This is not
a suddaraita,
not to sell to
Nachri. It's an istudaraita to sell to Nachri. So the Torah says lo sechaneim. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that don't give him a chaniya, don't give him a parking spot.
So he
violated the Isser in the Torah. In other words, the sale is still a sale. The transaction works, even though the Torah says don't do it, but the transaction works. You have this in the Torah. We're in the middle of Seder Nashim. How many times the Torah says don't marry her? And again, with exception, all the Arayos, which are a lot of exceptions. But in other words, if a Kohen marries a Grusha, Torah says don't do it, but he did it.
So why is the penalty for it for that?
The penalty is he violated a law in the Torah.
And he did it purposely.
He did it on purpose, so he's an Avaryan. And
does he have to bring a korban?
No, he violated a law in the Torah. So and I'm just right now. I'm speaking extemporaneously, and it's a lav shebichlolos. The Torah doesn't say it with absolute clarity. The Torah, it's derived from the losechanim, which are three sermon from that pasuk. Okay. Anyway, he shouldn't have done it. Let's keep it simple.
Is this considered a
knas? Huh? It's right. The Mishnah's language is tikkun olam. So, but yeah, if I were to frame it, I would certainly, and certainly the way Rashi, the way Rashi puts it, sounds like a kanas.
I mean, it's sort of the same principle when you sell an eved to,
Correct. Agreed. Okay.
Now,
that's our big topic. That's coming up right now. And so now, what the first big topic of this sugya is going to be: what happens to the actual land itself when it's sold to a non-Jew? Does it still have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael? Does it not have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael? And as you can imagine, it's a machlokas, you don't have to imagine. It is. The Gemara starts off, Amar Rabbah. Alpha Pishen Kinyalovi Kocham Eretz Yisrael Afkimi De Meister. There is a Goy's acquisition does not remove Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. That is the opinion of Rabbah. And so therefore, anytime you sell land to a Goy in Eretz Yisrael, that land still has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael.
But he has no ownership.
No, the words are, right, the Kenyan cannot be Mafkia. The Kenyan is a Kenyan, but it can't be Mafkia. It can't remove Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. So, Shenamar ki li haaretz, li Kedushas Eretz. And the Torah says that the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael is not attached to ownership. Doesn't matter who owns it. Jew, non-Jew, it doesn't matter. Ki li haaretz, the land belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Consequently, that means that whoever the owner of the land is, the land has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And it's chayiv in everything. Trumos, Maitzos, Bikurim, when a guy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, so he can't remove Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, but what can he do with the land? Whatever he wants. Meaning the Kenyan is a full Kenyan, giving him every right to do with the land what a owner, what a landowner is allowed, entitled to do. He could dig, he can dig holes in the land. It's within his right to do so. He's the owner. Although it still has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, meaning Kili Haaretz, I mean the true owner is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but in terms of Kinyanim, the way you and I do commerce, it belongs to the guy in that he can do with it what he pleases. Shenema Shemaim Shemaim Lashem Ba'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. Livnei Adam. Okay, so that is the opinion of Rabbah.
The fact that the Mishnah said itself that he has to get Bikurim, the last sentence, Does it not mean that the
Well, I would argue, not, and when I say I, the Gemara is about to argue, keep reading in the Mishnah. Why? Mimnei tikkun ha'olam. Why would the Mishnah say Mimnei tikkun ha'olam? The Mishnah should just simply say, it's chayv and bikurim. Why is the Mishnah introducing tikkun olam as being the reason why he needs to do that? The Gemara is going to discuss this. Again, this is all, let the Gemara unfold, let the Gemara present the case. So, opinion number one in the Gemara is Rabbah. Rabbah says that when a guy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, again, the Jew shouldn't have sold it. Okay, it's a good starting point for the discussion. But, once a guy owns it, so the land still has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Afa Pish Yesh King Elovi Kochavim, Be'eretz Yisrael Afkia Midi Maiser Shenemar Digan Chavlo Digan Ovi Kochavim. Now Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that when a guy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, he does have the power to be Mafkia Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Kedushas Eretz Yisrael is connected with ownership. If it's owned by a Jew, it has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. If it's owned by a guy, it does not have the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. He can be Mafkia the Kedusha. Aval ein kinyan lo vikocham be'eretz Yisrael lachbar baros shichen uma'arish. And amar l'Hashem ha'aretz. However, when the guy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, he's limited in terms of his ownership. His ownership will only allow him to treat the land like the land is normally treated. Harvest, produce, growing produce on the land. But he cannot manipulate the land as he pleases. So it's interesting. Rabbi Lazar, on the issue of, argues really on two points. Point number one is he argues on the Kedusha. He feels that if a non-Jew owns land in Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha was Mufka. Kedusha has been removed. On the other hand, the ownership is a limited ownership, in that what he's only limited to do is regular usage of the land. Okay, b'mai kamiflig, the Gemara says, what is at the source of this machlokas? Mar sarva digan chav, lo digan ovi kochavim, or mar sarva digun chav, lo digun ovi kochavim. So the Gemara says, really, what at the source is as we just quoted the pasuk, Meiser digancha. Digancha sounds like possessive. It sounds like it's your digan. So, digancha velo digan ovi kochavim, is it going on the produce? Or diguncha velo digun ovi kochavim, or is it going on the action? Meaning the action of working the land. So the Gemara says that could be what it's riding on. Basically, it's a question of Chefza or Gavra. Is it going on? Is the Kedusha Teretz Yisrael totally on the one who is growing the produce, or is the connection, or is it connected only on the actual produce itself?
But the thing is that the seller is no longer growing it, though, right? It's like mm-hmm. doesn't have any connection.
Correct. So, then, in other words, so if it's a question on the gavra, if it's going on the person, so then it makes a matter, and then it's going to make a difference who owns the land. That's exactly Rebbe Lazar's point. Rebbe Lazar says once a guy is doing the action of growing, so that's it. Doesn't have kedushas eretz yisrael. And Rabbi will tell you, no, it doesn't matter who owns it. It's degan, meaning it's just a function of the produce. Amar Rabba Menaminala. Okay, and here we go. So from this point going forward, now we're going to see in the Gemara various Mishnayos, Brises throughout Shas that are going to point in one direction or another. So again, this is a fundamental machlokus right here in Gittin. Today's daf Mem Zayin. Whether or not when a guy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, is the Kedusha going to be Mufka? Will the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael be removed? Rabba says that the Kedusha is still there, right? Ki li ha'aretz. The land belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu, doesn't matter who owns it. It's always going to have Kedusha Eretz Yisrael. Now, according to Rabbah, where's this principle generated from? So let's take a look at some Mishnayos. Ditnan. Halecha v'ashicha peyam, sha'ove kochavim. You have any of these chiyuve aniyim. Right, we have for your own land in Eretz Yisrael, so parts of the land have to be given over to the aniyim, to the poor. So when you collect and there's some one or two left out in the field, or shichacha, right, you bring everything into the granary and you leave something and you forget something out in the field, or peah, a corner of the field. So in these examples, so that has to be given over to the aniyah, to the aniyim, to the poor. What if it was land owned by a non-Jew? So the Mishnah goes on, like a shechapeh, shal v'kochavim, chayevim b'maiser. So it's going to be chayevim b'maiser, ela imkein hifker. Unless he was mafker, unless he declared it to be ownerless. Now hechidami. Now the Gemara says, let's think this through. Ilema di Yisrael v'liktenu ove kochavim. Now the Gemara says, let's see if we can follow. Let's say the land belonged to a Jew, and a non-Jew came along, and he was malaki, and he collected that which was left over in the field. So elam kein hifker hamafker v'kaime. So what does that mean? He's mafkir. That's a strange language. He's mafkir. The whole idea behind leket is that it's already mufkar. That's the whole idea. Meaning, you harvested your field. There's one or two sheaves left over out in the field. Good. That's hefker. Meaning, it belongs to whoever goes out to the field it takes. So what does that mean? He's mafke. That doesn't make any sense. El alav da v'kochavim. V'lekin yisrael. So it must mean that this land belonged to a non-Jew. And there was leket. And who collected the leket? The Jew. So time of the hefker. Alo hefker chayav. So that means that if the guy was mafkir, so then that's fine. But if the guy was not mafkir, so then it's chayiv, leket, shechacha, and peya. So that gives us the indication that if I have land owned by a non-Jew, it's chayiv and everything. It's chayiv and leket, shechacha, and peya. Unless the guy did something where he was, he verbally was mafkir the produce in that land. But status quo, the default setting is that it's chayiv in all these matnos aniyim, leket shechan peya.
If the akum doesn't have any kimana to have leket, and if he realizes he wants it back, why would there be leket?
Because that's part of land in Eretz Yisrael. Anything left in after harvest, anything left in the field, it has a designation of leket. That's part of kedushas Eretz Yisrael. So that's what it sounds like from the Mishnah. Look, so the Gemara says we could sidestep this proof. La olam di Yisrael. It could very well be that the land in question over here is owned by a Jew. V'lektinu ovei kochadim. And the person who went and collected in the field was a non-Jew. V'dekamard ha-mafkir v'kaimi. Now, why did we balk at that suggestion earlier? Because the language of the Mishnah in Peah is he was mafkir. What does that mean, he was mafkir? The whole definition of anything left over in the field, it is mufkar. It already is ownerless. That's the whole designation. So the Gemara says, Nehi de mafkare adait de Yisrael adait de ovikochavim mi mafkare. Gemara says something fascinating. The Gemara says, no, that when a Jew owns a land in Eretz Yisrael, and he harvested and there's leftover in the field, and what we call leket. So that by definition, that by itself is not mufkar lakol, meaning it is leket. And anyone who comes, and any poor person who comes on the field and takes, is entitled to take. But that doesn't mean that it's mufkar for everybody. It's mufkar for Aniya Yisrael. It doesn't mean that it is ownerless. It basically means it's assigned. It's assigned as leket, which means that a Jew can come onto the field and take. But doesn't mean anybody can come onto the field and take. To which the Mishnah and Peah is teaching us that if the Jew says, you know, I'm declaring everything here to be mufkar, meaning totally ownerless, then you have the ability, the right of anyone to come onto the field and to take. Yeah.
When the land is sold, the notaries who bought it, his intention maybe not anybody take anything from the land.
Okay.
What happens then?
In other words, we're right now just dealing with the abstract. We're just dealing with where do we stand on the basic halacha of what status does the land have? Rabbi will tell you this: the land still has kedusha Eretz Yisrael, and if the guy wants to do the right thing, he's got to treat the land with kedusha Eretz Yisrael.
At his discretion.
Yeah, at his exactly. Okay, so Tashma Yisrael Shalaka Shalaka Chsadim El Vekochavim Ad Shelo Hevi Ashlish. So the Gemara now is going to quote what I think is a brisa, but a Jew buys land from an Ovei Kochavim in Eretz Yisrael, and the produce started growing, but it didn't reach a third yet. A third is a critical point in which it would be chayev in Shumas HaMaisros. Okay, so but it didn't reach that point yet. And then the Jew had it, and under the Jew's ownership, the fruit went from under a third developed to over a third developed. So it reached and passed the critical point of chayev Shumas HaMaisros while under the ownership of a Jew. And then he goes and sells it back to a non-Jew. Okay, so chayev is b'maisa, shekvan is chayev. So the Brisa teaches us that it is chayev in Trumas HaMaisos. Why? Because when it went from that critical point of being under a third to over a third, it belonged to a Jew. Okay, and now the diuk is pretty simple, and the Gemara spells it out. Nischayva in, on nischayva lo. That's only because the Jew owned it at that critical stage. It sounds like had the Jew not owned it at that critical stage, it would not be chayv in Shumas HaMaisros. So, hacha b'maiskinan b'surya v'kasov v'kivash yachelo shmei kivash. The Gemara says we could sidestep that proof as well. Maybe that Bryce is talking not about Eretz Yisrael proper. Eretz Yisrael proper is going to be chayv in Shumas HaMaisros regardless of who owns it. And this price is talking about in Syria. Syria was conquered. Say it's Aram Tzova. Rashi says it's one and the same. It was conquered by David HaMelech. It was Kivish Yachid. We just did it recently in our Gemara here in Gittin. Anyway, it was an annexation that was done, but not with public consent, public need. It was only done by David HaMelech by himself. And so therefore it does not have full status of Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore the rules of Syria are, to put it simply, the rules are a little bit lighter. Meaning that if you have land of Syria owned by non-Jew, so then there's not going to be Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Because it's a lighter annexation. Okay, Tashma. Gemara is going to try to bring another proof. Let's say you have a property that's owned in partnership between Jew and non-Jew. So according to Rebbe now, what about the produce? Fascinating. Produce now is going to be a joint ownership of Jew and non-Jew. So is it chayv and shumas amaisos? The answer is 50% of it. 50% of every grain is chayv and shumas amaisos. What's the remedy? Oh, another time we'll discuss it. But in other words, and it's not unimportant. It's just, you'll see, it's just, right now I just want to focus on the basic question. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Shal Ovei Kochavim Pater V'Shal Yisrael Chayev. So, and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says no, that if it belongs to an Ovei Kochavim, it's exempt. If it belongs to a Jew, it's going to be Chayev. Meaning, they're partners. What are they going to do as partners? They're going to split. So whatever the Jew takes as his percentage, that's going to be Chayev Trumas HaMaisos. Whatever the guy takes as his, it's going to not be Chayev Trumas HaMaisos. Now, Adkan lo pligi ala demar sav yesh brera mar sav ein brera. Now, really at the core of this issue is whether or not we subscribe to brera, retroactive selection. Meaning Rashi ben Gamliel is a believer in brera. He will tell you that once the Jew takes that 50%, that's not his 50% now, that was always his 50%, meaning as it was growing in the ground, that belonged to the Jew. And when the guy took his 50%, that's just not his 50% now. That's the 50% that was growing in the ground, which is Pater and Trumas HaMaisos. Rebbe, on the other hand, does not subscribe to Breira. But the Gemara says, but you see, that's the only issue. What is the supposition of both of their positions is that whatever belongs to a guy is not Chayv and Trumas HaMaisos. That's a fantastic proof that any land owned by a non-Jew does not have kedusha Eretz Yisrael. So ad kan lo pligi ela de masav yesh bera masav ein bera. Aval de kule ama yesh kinen ovi kochan beretz Yisrael afki miyad meiser. So this seems to be once again a fantastic proof. Hachanami besuria. So the Gemara says not a fantastic proof because we're once again you could sidestep the whole discussion by saying that this is specific only to the province of Suria. And again, over there the halachas of ownership in Suria will affect the kedusha, but in Eretz Yisrael proper, doesn't matter who owns it. It's going to have kedusha Eretz Yisrael. Amar Chia Bar Avin Tashma Mocher Sadelo VeKochem Lo Kechem Evi Bikurim Mimnei Tikana Olam. Now we turn to our Mishnah, and this is, of course, the reason why this whole discussion comes up now, because Machlok is Rabban Rabbi Lazar, and what is serving as one of the sources of this discussion, our very Mishnah. Our Mishnah talks about a person selling the land to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael and Bikurim. It's still Chayv and Bikurim. Now, the Mishnah, if the Mishnah stopped there, we would have had a proof one way. But the Mishnah didn't stop there. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, because of Tikkun Olam. Mimnei Tikkun Olam in Midorais Olo. It sounds like the only issue over here is it's Tikkun Olam. Meaning it's a rabbinic institution that you should do this. Fundamentally, it's not Chayv and Bikurim. But the rabbis felt that what you did is not right. You know what? You're going to have to go and, right, let's learn like Rashi. You're going to have to go out of your way every year to go buy back that Bikurim. Okay, now, very interesting Rashi over here, another Rashi to highlight for today. A really interesting Rashi. Rashi Midaraisa Lo. Meaning right now what the Gemara is arguing, based on the wording of the Mishnah, is that there is no fundamental obligation of Bikurim from the produce. Rashi says, V'yein kinyin lo v'kocham lafkei mekdusha sav, yilei lein kedusha sav b'rishos Yisrael, kilo mashkena. Meaning, if the guys did not remove the kedusha sav Eretz Yisrael, so that means it would be chayiv. V'kevin de Bikurim mitzvah derami alayahi, v'lo tav l'les repairs b'achila, mechayiv likech ulahavi. Rashi says, look, let's for a moment imagine that there's a fundamental obligation of Bikurim. Meaning, I know the Gemara right now is arguing otherwise, right? But if there was a fundamental obligation, meaning the land had Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, so then obviously you'd have to take Bikurim. Rashi says, think about what Bikurim is. Aside from being the first fruit. Bikurim is not something which is going to make the rest of the produce tevel. Unlike Trumas, Maisros, you can't eat any of the produce of the field until you take off Trumas HaMaisros. That's not true by Bikurim. By Bikurim, the halacha is that you could, if a person, for whatever reason, doesn't bring Bikurim, he could still eat the produce of the field. It doesn't make the other produce tevel. So what really is Bikurim? It's a mitzvah. It's not a tikkun. It's not there to rectify the other produce. It is simply just a mitzvah. If the Mishnah would have said, hey, you know, you got to take off Bikurim, and the Mishnah didn't attach the rest of the words of Mimnei Tikkun Olam, so then what we would have had, said Rashi, is an outstanding proof that of course Eretz Yisrael still has Kedusha. Because unlike Trumas HaMaisros, there's a need to take off Trumas HaMaisros because I got to rectify the rest of the produce. By Bikurim, there's no need. Even if we didn't take off Bikurim, I could still eat it. The rest of the produce doesn't become tevel. Rashi goes on to write, "V'lo damin la'maiser," and it's not like maiser. Leman damin kinyan lo mechayv la'aser al chelko shel v'kocham de maiser tavel va'aser le'ba'achila v'lav mitzvah derami alahi ela im ken ochlan o machran dekamishar shelay avav bikurim mitzvah derami alahi. You see, unlike trumas and maisers, which of course it's a mitzvah, but there it's more than just a mitzvah. I won't be able to eat the produce until I take off trumas and maisers. By bikurim, you see, it's such a better case study because Bikurim is nothing but a mitzvah. It doesn't rectify the rest of the produce, so I could still eat the rest of the produce without taking off Bikurim. That's why Bikurim becomes such a good case study in whether or not the land of Eretz Yisrael has kedusha or not. If the Mishnah would have said you got to take Bikurim, so great. But the Mishnah says you got to take a Bikurim because Tikkun Olam. Oh, you see, now that the Gemara is now making the case that it's not fundamentally, you don't fundamentally have to take off Bikurim because the guy took away the Kedusha Eretz Yisrael.
Isn't Bikurim one of the only things that you actually have to make a declaration, like Cheshbon Nefesh that I offer by brother?
No. The Vidu is going on everything. Vidu is going on Ultra Masa Maisers. Yeah. So, Mimnei Tikkun Olam in Midorais alone. So, I'm Rav Ashi Shtei Takanos Havu. So, Rav Ashi says, okay, we could sidestep this proof as well. Meaning, why did the Mishnah use the word Tikkun Olam? So, Rav Ashi is going to give a somewhat complex explanation of how to understand the Mishnah. Dehavu Mikara, so I'm sorry, Shtei Takanos Havu. Mikara Hava Maisi Midorais. In other words, what would happen is that originally they would take off Bikurim and, let's argue, Midaraisa, meaning it's a fundamental requirement to take off Bikurim, even though the land was sold to a non-Jew. So, but then what the Chachamim saw is, wait a second, we're not impeding the sale of a land to a non-Jew, because what's the mentality? The mentality is, I'll sell the land to a non-Jew, okay, no harm, no foul. I'll still take off Bikurim. I know there's a requirement to take off Bikurim. I'll still do it every year. So there was nothing really impeding the sale of the land. So Takinaluhu Dololaisu. So then the Chachamim said, okay, you know what? Let's go. You sell land to a non-Jew, don't bring Bikurim. So Kim Dechazu Demandalo Sagalu Mizvan Vika Mishtakam Biyado Vikochavim. But then they saw that that Takana actually backfired. Meaning, so then, okay, so they sold to a non-Jew, and there's no mitzvah bikurim. So hadu takina luhu delaisu. So then they went back to go ahead. You sell your land to a non-Jew, but you're going to be the one now who's responsible to bring bikurim. And even though the Mishnah says tikkun olam, the Mishnah means we're going to revert back to the original position, which is really the fundamental position, which is that you have to take off. You have to take off bikurim. Okay, adkan. So, after quoting, I think the tally was 4. I should have kept better count. After tallying, could be four different Mishnahs and Braisos, the Gemara still has left unresolved the question of whether or not when a goy owns land in Eretz Yisrael, is he mafkia the Kedusha? Okay, most go like Rabba, which is that the ownership of a goy in Eretz Yisrael is not going to be mafkia the Kedusha. Okay, much discussed on that one point. Let's just start the next discussion in the Gemara. Hamocher Sadeo Leperis. Yeah. Like Rabba. The Kili Haaretz. The land belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Itmar Hamocher Sadeo Leperis. Okay. And now this is like our second big topic of today. We'll obviously just start the topic, and tomorrow we will conclude on this matter. You sell land, but not the property itself. You sell the produce of the land. Okay. In other words, you have the right to harvest the land for 5 years, 10 years. So now, you're the owner of not the land, not the physical property, but all the yield of the property. What kind of owner does that make you? The title holder, meaning the original owner owns the land. But what he did is he gave the rights to somebody else to work the land and, you know, take all the produce of the land. It's basically, you know, and the Gemara is going to make this point. This is not me being insightful. This is just me knowing the Gemara coming up ahead. This is basically like a marriage. When a woman is married to a man, so her land is going to be worked by the husband. And the husband is going to enjoy all yield of the land, even though she's a title holder. She's the owner of the land, but he's going to get all the peros. So Hamokha Sadala Peros, Rav Yochanan Amar, Mevi Vikore. Rav Yochanan says, you are the owner, even though you're not the owner. You're not right. Whose name is on title? Not you. But it doesn't matter. Effectively, you owning the fruit is like you're owning the land itself, and so therefore you're going to bring the Bikurim to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, and you're going to put it on the Mizbeach, and not only that, you're going to do Kriya. Like I mentioned earlier this morning, there are two mitzvahs, Habaz Bikurim, bring the Bikurim, and Kriya. Now in the Kriya, what do we say? Adamash and Asatali, the land that you gave me, you're calling yourself in the Kriya the owner. Rav Yochanan says, fair. That's fair. And now Reish Lakish Amar may be Vena Kore. Reish Lakish says, you have a mitzvah of Bikurim, but you're not going to do Kriya. Now Rav Yochanan Amar may be Kore, Kinyan Peros, Kikinyan Haguf Dame. Rav Yochanan's position is Kinyan Peros, is Kikinyan Haguf. It says, it's tantamount to you owning the land itself. Tantamount. meaning obviously you're not the title holder, but your rights to the produce makes you as if you own the land. Reish Lakish Amar Mevi Venokori, King and Paraslavki, King and Agovdami. And Reish Lakish says no, that just because you have usage of the land does not make you the owner of the land. The mitzvah of Bikurim, as we mentioned earlier, is in the beginning of Parshas Kisavo. The Torah says, you bring the Bikurim of your wife, meaning your wife is going to come into the marriage, she'll come in with property, she'll still be the title holder, you'll receive all rights to Peros, it's what we call Nichsei Malug, and the Pasuk says, you bring it and you're Kore. Even though it's not your property, it's your wife's property. So the counter to that is that's a special pasuk, meaning the default setting is that you're not the owner. There, the Torah says ulaveischa. The second version is that Reish Lakish uses this as his proof. And Reish Lakish will argue, this is a proof for me, because the default setting is, it's not your property. Here the Torah goes out of its way to tell you that you should still bring the produce of your wife. So, and Rav Yochanan's response is, what do you mean? That's not changing the default setting. That is a default setting. The Torah is telling you that once you have rights to produce, that is considered like it's yours. Okay, let's do one more. You are walking and you have the Bikurim of your wife in hand, walking to the Beis HaMikdash, and unfortunately your wife dies. You inherit all the property of your wife. You bring and you read. So, Mesa in, lo Mesa lo. Sounds like from the Brisa, it's only because she died and you inherited it. But had she not died, so then all you had was just produce, and that does not make you the owner, meaning you can't be kare. So the Gemara says, "What then? Dafak Abdullah Mesa? Umesa Tzurich Le Sakadat Chamin Elegzer Mishum De Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanin Damer Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina Batsam Veshigram Yashliach Umes Shliach Bederech Mevi Venokari Shenemar Vlakachta Vaveisa Achtei Lekicha Vava Keechad or Beechad Kamash Malan." The halacha of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina is that the one who, in order to read the parsha of Kriyas Bikurim, it has to be one and the same person the whole time. Meaning there cannot be a transfer from one person to another. So if the shliach dies and somebody else finishes bringing the Bikurim, he's not going to be kari. It has to be done by the same person. I might have thought that if your wife dies, it's not the same person. Meaning the land when I first started primarily belonged to my wife, not to me. And then when she dies, so I'm the primary owner of the land. So I might have thought, that's a transfer ownership, and therefore no longer have the right to read. So that's the chiddush. The chiddush is no. That's not considered a real significant transfer of ownership, and therefore I by right can read. Okay, adkan. So really, on today's daf, two really huge issues in terms of Eretz Yisrael. Number one, a goy owns land in Eretz Yisrael, is he mafkia the kedusha? That is a machlokis between Rab and Rebbe Lazar. Second big issue is that if you own produce of a land, are you tantamount to an owner of the land itself? Machlokis Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. This will continue tomorrow.